Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, House Ag Committee member Dan Newhouse joins the show to discuss ag labor reform and additional farm aid. But first, here are this week's headlines. The timing of the Senate Farm Bill markup remains uncertain with the continued hospitalization of Senator Mitch McConnell. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman John Bozeman says the committee's planned markup has been pushed back until late July or the first week of August. Lawmakers will leave Washington in August for annual recess. With Republicans holding a one-seat majority in the committee, Bozeman says advancing the bill could be difficult without McConnell present. Shrinking the Republican Senate majority even more, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham died unexpectedly after suffering an aortic dissection. The seat was filled by his sister, Darlene Graham. Three Biden-era competition rules are marked for rescission under the Trump administration's regulatory agenda. According to the Office of Management and Budget, USDA is weighing delays or withdrawal of a rule preventing poultry integrators from using reduced or discount payment rates in tournament systems and establishing a duty of fair compensation. The administration is also considering eliminating a requirement for integrators to disclose five-year average grower payments and key broiler production cost information. The American Farm Bureau Federation and National Farmers Union said they are troubled by indications that USDA may rescind or continue delaying rules intended to benefit farmers and ranchers. The Securing Agriculture's Workforce Act was unveiled in the House this month. Congressman Dan Newhouse, a longtime ag labor advocate, joined the show to discuss the impact of the bill.
This is something I've been working on for a long time. Our nation's agricultural industry needs some certainty around our guest worker program. Securing a legal workforce is very important for producers around the country. And this goes a long way towards some of the reforms that are necessary for us to secure certainty in our labor force, as well as affordability for the workers and for the farmers. So I'm very, very excited about the being able to move this legislation. The good thing about this is the timing, I think. Although the legislative year is short, there's issues on about our border, about immigration are on everybody's mind. And I think we have an opportunity here to be part of perhaps a larger effort that could be happening here in the House of Representatives and throughout Congress. So we can talk a lot about it, but the exciting thing about this is between 300 and 400 agricultural groups around the country support this legislation. And so that also gives me a lot of excitement and hope that we can get something done.
Yeah, and there's a lot to unpack there, but Congress, you know, has been debating ag labor reform for decades, and you're a big champion of the Farm Workforce Modernization Act. I mean, what's different when we look at this, you know, what we're seeing now with SAWA versus then? I mean, have political times changed?
Well, I think they have. It's no secret that one of the biggest obstacles to passing the Farm Workforce Modernization Act was the, how would you describe it, the state of our borders at that time. You know, we had a period of time where there was literally the borders seemed to be open. We had thousands of people coming across the border every single day. And that was a very difficult time to pass any legislation, not just as it relates to ag work, labor, but any legislation related to the border, when our border was in that kind of a state. Now, those concerns are, you know, literally our border has been secured. Illegal crossings are almost zero. And so people are feeling much better about our safety and security of our country. Certainly there's some concerns of making sure that we maintain that. But I think that's the biggest difference right now. We have a whole new dynamic on our, particularly our southern border, but also our northern border. And so people can look at and focus more on the real need to reform our work visa programs.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. The House Budget Committee is requesting $12 billion in additional farm aid through Reconciliation 3.0. We asked Washington Congressman Dan Newhouse if this total is sufficient or if he expects pushback.
Is it sufficient? There's never going to be enough money to make up the for some of the losses farmers are seeing for a variety of reasons. It's tough in farm country right now, as many of your listeners will attest to. So we're fighting as hard as we can to make sure that whatever assistance we can bring forward is as will go as far as possible to meet that need. Their numbers have been shifting already, unfortunately, in the downward trend from what was originally proposed, but nothing's certain yet. So we're trying to make the case as strongly as possible to secure as much funding as possible. We've already done some things, some positive things in this session to respond to the needs in ag country. What I'm focused on in particular is making sure that something we call specialty crops, some of the minor crops that are grown around the country, are that we focus more on those this time, that we're kind of, I won't say shortchanged, but we're not as highly emphasized in our first rounds of assistance. And so that's where I want to make sure that we provide them with as much help as we can. But it's, like I said, this is a process. It's a moving target right now. And we're engaging as much as we can with the members of my colleagues to make sure we can do as good a job as possible for our producers.
Yeah. Chairman Thompson had joined this program about 2 weeks ago and said that, you know, he's aiming for about $5 billion of that package, or half that package, to go to specialty crops. I know you have a lot of specialty crops in your district, but is that the figure that's, you know, being floated around now and that you'd like to see?
Yeah, that's kind of the number that we've been settling on. So we're hoping that will it be at least that level. But if we can secure more, that would be very helpful as well. But that's the level of funding that through the budget committee and those of us that are working in this in the agricultural committee are looking at hoping to secure. And also we're looking across the rotunda, working with our Senate colleagues too, so that we have similar sight on what our goal is.
Yeah. And Congressman Newhouse, as we wrap up here, we'd be remiss not to mention that you'll be retiring at the end of this Congress. You're one of the only farmers in Congress now. But, you know, as you've looked back at your term, I mean, is there something that you're most proud of that you've gotten to work on? I know you've been a big advocate of ag labor, or, you know, some of the biggest pressing issues that need to be dealt with from a policy perspective in the agriculture space looking ahead.
Well, it's been a tremendous honor for me to represent an agricultural district, being a farmer myself. And like you said, I'm one of the few in Congress. It's been a very huge honor and opportunity to, on a daily basis, help educate my colleagues who maybe not come from farm country, that represent more urban districts, so that they better understand the challenges that farmers face throughout our country. And so that's been a very rewarding thing to be able to be part of that. And we've been able to move the ball forward very well on a lot of different things. You know, the farm bill that we got passed through the House, the big, beautiful bill that we got a lot of agricultural wins in that as well. One of the things that I'm very happy about is, and I'm hopeful it'll come to a culmination, but when I started in Congress, there weren't a lot of people talking about reforms to the agricultural labor rules and laws that we have. Now it's on everybody's mind. The level of understanding and urgency on the part of members of Congress that we have to do things to help our agricultural producers is very high. And we see that reflected in the some of the wins that we've had. But we still have some challenges going forward. And I'm feeling good that a lot of people in Congress understand the need to get these things done. It's been a tremendous honor representing an agricultural area in the United States Congress. And I'm looking forward to being continuing to be engaged. My plan is to go back to the farm. But I'll be watching very closely what's happening in Washington, D.C. You can bet on that.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Grace Miller compares U.S. and Brazilian input costs in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
These charts detail how much more American corn and soybean farmers pay for key input costs over Brazilian farmers. For both corn and soybean producers, American farmers pay over double the cost as Brazilian farmers for fungicide and herbicide. Corn producers pay on average 68% more for seed and 87% more for insecticides. For soybeans, American farmers pay 24% more for seed and 31% more for insecticides. A report released last week by the National Corn Growers Association says these premiums can affect profitability and competition for American growers. For AgriPulse, I'm Grace Miller.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our branded facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. Sorghum growers from across the country were in Washington this week. National Sorghum Producers Chairwoman Amy France joins us to share their message to lawmakers and administration officials.
Well, first, a big thanks to the members of the House for getting their portion of the farm bill done. E15, sorghum is used in ethanol production. So a thanks to those members. And then continuing to push on the trade front, China, India, and others. And Senate side, encouraging them to get this done, mark it off the list. Again, reminding them that we need that E15 language one way or the other. We're a little uncertain what that looks like, but this is the closest we've ever gotten. So a thanks and just saying, how can we support and get this across the finish line?
Yeah. And Amy, big thing we've been talking about sorghum is the Food for Peace program that was included in the House passed farm bill. We haven't seen that exact language in the Senate text when the draft was released. But, what's the benefit of that program for sorghum and how do you see it moving forward?
Well, really exciting. About a month ago, just a couple hours south of my house in western Kansas, left the farm, went down there to see 108 rail cars loaded with U.S. sorghum headed out for the first USDA-administered sorghum shipment of Food for Peace. So there is proof that it's still moving 400,000 bushels. And that just truly reminds us of what the Food for Peace program is all about. It's a win-win, a win for using U.S. grown commodities to feed hungry people in the world, as well as securing a market for our farmers, moving those bushels. So we continue to carry that message, why that needs to be secured in USDA. But really exciting, there is nothing more incredible, I think, to see than that amount of rail cars filled with sorghum ready to hit the road. And so really a great honor to see that happen this summer.
Yeah. And Senator Jerry Moran in the Senate has been a big advocate of that, also from Kansas. Yeah. But what's the benefit of that program broadly? I mean, when that's in motion for sorghum producers?
Well, it just moves those bushels. So, as we talk about often, international trade is in limbo right now. 50 to 70% of our export market goes to China. So we're looking at that closely. We're looking for this clearance on E15. So we're focusing on domestic as well. So when we've got a lot of things standing still, that movement right there gives us some confidence in what can happen. So really excited about not only the food for peace aspect going, but if we can get all of this moving in forward direction, I will have a lot of happy growers.
And the Agriculture Department recently released new guidance on the 45Z Clean Fuels Production Tax Credit. You know, sorghum is actually recognized as an eligible feedstock under that new guidance. I mean, what's the importance of that for your sector?
Well, we're grateful for USDA to put out that guidance for 45Z. Sorghum oil still does need to be included. So now the next step is DOE and Treasury moving it forward so that we are getting this guidance moving towards the credits to ultimately get that back at the farm gate. So again, Lydia, it's all about moving that bushels. We're looking at lots of different avenues to do that. We've waited a long time for this. Again, our farmers need this certainty and confidence to invest in what's next and expected from them. So we're excited to see that, but we do need that certainty from and the next step from DOE and Treasury.
Yeah, and producers hear a lot about those low carbon fuels. You mentioned year-round E15 as well as this 45Z credit. But, you know, how do those actually, could they change marketing opportunities? And for those farmers, producers that are listening to us right now, I mean, what's in it for them?
Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? They're going to just be rewarded for what they've been doing. Sorghum producers have been wonderful in the way they've stewarded land and taken care of an efficiency. And so it's just rewarding what they've already been doing. So that's kind of the beauty of it. There's nothing new that you have to do, no implement to buy, no software to buy. And that's good news, because it feels like every time we turn around, we're asked to do something new, but wait, you need to spend this first. So this is just rewarding good stewardship, what we've already been doing, and having this recognized.
Yeah. And Amy, you and your family farm in Western Kansas, but I wanted to get your thoughts just on sorghum crop out in Kansas and all across the country this year. What are you seeing?
Well, I get the honor to represent South Dakota to South Texas and outlying states. And so our South Texas crop is being harvested, and some complete, some still going, but some above average yield. So really excited about that. We just got the sorghum in the ground, and we've had tremendous rain in Western Kansas, which is strange. We've had to replant because we've had so much rain. But once we have that and see what comes up, we have the potential to have an excellent yield again this year. Last year, we had record-breaking yields, which my producers reminded me that I needed to get that out. So I am betting and praying that we have that same yield, and that we have some things across the finish line to move the bushels that are produced this year.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. Soybean growers from across the U.S. were in Washington this week meeting with lawmakers and administration officials. American Soybean Association President Scott Metzger stopped by the studio to discuss their policy priorities.
Yeah, thanks, Lydia. Yeah, it's been a good warm week in D.C. So, some of our top priorities here we were talking about this week was Farm Bill and, making sure we try to get that championed across the finish line, and as well as 45Z. Make sure those final tax guidance gets put in place and gets implemented. It's also what's near and dear that's become the hot topic lately is our, input costs and stuff. And we've expressed with everyone how how the input prices have spiked up, and how it's really coming back to the farm gate and hurting the economy that's been an already tight economy.
Yeah, let's maybe start there with those input costs. Mm-hmm. The administration recently suspended countervailing duties on imported phosphate fertilizer. But, you know, how much of a difference could this make for growers planting their 2027 crop as we kind of look ahead to those prices?
Well, you know, that's just it. It'll help a little bit, but that's going to be a little bit more longer term, probably into the following year. I mean, we've already got prices for 27 inputs. I mean, us personally, we've actually already prepaid our 28 nitrogen for next year with it. So, and it was one of those deals where you had about an hour to decide whether you wanted to do it, and the next day it went up like $10 a ton. But very similar with the phosphates. It's definitely going to help. And we thank the administration for putting those in place, because that's one thing we have talked about here for a good while is getting rid of the countervailing duties. But that's it. It'll help, but it's still going to be pricey. Yeah.
Does that do anything to, you know, create enough competition to lower prices, or, you know, what other issues should be addressed to really help farmers with this fertilizer
standard? Yeah, you know, lack of competition is obviously a big thing. There's just not a lot of competitors out there, and we were thankful with the administration to start ramping up that domestic production here in the U.S. But, and again, that's a going to take a little bit of time to do, but it's a step in the right direction with it.
Yeah. And USDA also recently finalized the regenerative feedstock rule, which could create new value-added opportunities for soybean farmers mm-hmm. and farmers of other crops. You know, how does that work for the farmer on the ground that's listening right now? I mean, how will that work for them?
Well, that's with that getting put in place, it'll just help. You know, you'll end up getting better local basis with it, which in turn is going to give you more money in your pocket to operate with, and as well for the feed side of people, there'll be more crush potential there, and cheaper feed costs as well.
And between, you know, those stronger renewable fuel policies and improvement to 45Z program, are we beginning to see somewhat more of a long-term shift where domestic demand becomes more of a growth opportunity for U.S. soybeans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to, you know, with our lack of trade with China last year, it's good to see that a step going forward with getting domestic production put in place, you know, to help use up more bean bushels that we have, and make, you know, we'll have more crush potential, more bean oil. So it's a whole win for the whole circle.
We'll be back with more newsmakers. But first, Grace Miller looks at top U.S. ag export destinations and this week's Map It Out.
This map shows the top countries where the United States exported agricultural goods on average between 2021 and 2025. Canada, Mexico, and China received more than $15 billion of U.S. ag products. The European Union combined and Japan received between $5 and $9 billion. USDA says 32% of total exports during this time period were sent to Canada and Mexico. East Asia received 30% of total exports, with the top three commodities being oilseeds, grains, and meats. For AgriPulse, I'm Grace Miller.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south, and it blew that way, and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate are in session next week, and USDA's crop progress report will be released on Monday. Before we go, I wanted to share that this is my final sign-off at AgriPulse. It's been an incredible privilege to cover the people and policies shaping American agriculture and to bring those stories to decision makers across rural America, just like you each week. Thank you for watching and for trusting me to share some of the most important stories from the nation's capital. And a special thank you to my parents and grandparents who have been my biggest fans every step of the way. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.